Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. In 2014, film director Annabelle Attanasio began ethnographic work in a small town in Montana called Anaconda. She was there to learn more about the large community of veterans that live there, the people she met, the beautiful Montana landscape, and especially the stories of veterans and their families provided the inspiration for her first feature film, Mickey and the Bear. The movie, which was filmed over 5 weeks on location in Anaconda, follows Mickey, a young woman in her senior year of high school whose dreams of living her own life are stifled by her codependent relationship with her opioid-addicted father, Hank, a veteran of the Iraq War who seems to have PTSD. Mickey works at a taxidermist after school to keep them afloat. She cooks her father dinner every night. She tucks him into bed after he passes out from either alcohol or drugs or both. Mickey dares to dream of college, but that seems unlikely until she meets someone who encourages her to dream bigger. Take a listen.
So how much this time? Dad, stop! My brain's in there!
Did you know that some days I can't even get him to eat?
Do you ever think about it? Leaving Montana?
I'm not going anywhere.
Where you been? Come here. Where you going?
I told you I'm tired.
From what?
This is too much for a kid.
Yeah, well, he's my dad.
Love ya!
It's only a matter of time before she gets as sick of it as you are.
Shut up about things you don't understand.
This isn't so bad.
You got something to say, come out and say it.
Where's my money?
Where's my money?
Annabelle, that is dramatic.
It is.
Writer and director Annabelle Attanasio joins me in studio. Welcome.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
So this began with you conducting this ethnographic research in Anaconda with a grant. It was a grant from NYU, correct?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
What drew you to the community?
Well, I was interested in telling a story of a codependent father-daughter dynamic, and as well as that, I wanted to depict a veteran's family narrative and look at how PTSD, addiction, and grief can affect the unit and specifically the child. So those two instincts kind of fused together in one for Mickey and the Bear. And a big part of my process is to do extensive research, especially having gone to NYU Gallatin, which is a very interdisciplinary mm-hmm. school. They really supported me in that. So I proposed a project that would send me out to Anaconda, Montana, because it's a very small town with a very prominent veteran population and community out there. And I wanted to do research for a summer before even beginning to tackle the script.
What did you know about Anaconda before going there? Did you just have that sort of that fact about it, or did you know more about the town?
I knew that it was a copper smelting town, and it was kind of a boom town in the 50s and 60s. And then in 1981, the smelter shut down. And so Anaconda locals lost their jobs, more or less, because everyone worked at the smelter. I also knew that part of why there is this really dense veterans community out there is because after military veterans and whatnot would be discharged and come back home, they could be guaranteed a job at the smelter. It was like a union town, so it's mm-hmm. I think that's why it garnered this community. But you know, I loved the very almost like mythic name Anaconda, and I loved the fact that it was this very untapped terrain. So now the history and kind of the visuals of the town is preserved in the movie.
What was something that you learned during this research and the study that really changed or had an impact on your script?
A big thing for me was meeting teenage girls in Anaconda and seeing the stoicism and the take no prisoners attitude and the very effortless grit of the girls who grow up there. There's like no girly girl mentality out there. They're as athletic and avid in hunting and fishing as all of the boys. And I think Anaconda specifically, but Montana in general, fosters really strong women. And that was something that I certainly didn't grow up around. So, with the exception of my mother. But yeah, I think that was a big part of the research process for me, was trying to honor these really formidable young women in Mickey.
When you had the opportunity to make the film, why did you choose to go back and actually do it in Anaconda?
Well, I wanted it to be as authentic as possible. And especially as a first-time director, I think I had like a lot of idealizations and aspirations to make it feel really real. So I picked the place that we would place the trailer 5 years ago, and we wound up shooting on that piece of land. And I don't know, I think I just don't, you couldn't replicate what is present in Anaconda and in Montana. And the scenery there is so vibrant and specific that like you can't fake that. So that's why I decided to do it that way.
You directed some shorts before, but this is your first like feature length film.
Yeah.
Who did you turn to for advice before you started, or during the filming process?
That's a great question. I had a lot of guardian angels on this process, and I don't think I could have done it without them. I always say my like 911 contact was my former acting teacher and now my kind of mentor in general, Bob Krakauer, who is phenomenal and a master of understanding on-set communication. So he was someone that I would call up, and he knew it was the 911 call, because you know, it's really a pressure cooker when you have very little time. And I think it's really crucial for especially first time directors, but even second, third time directors, to have that person that they can call.
What was a 911 situation for you?
we were shooting a really late night, and I remember we were shooting in a real trailer, we were shooting through a lot of doorways. And I remember there was like some note flying around. It's like, oh, like we're shooting through too many doorways. And my DP and I were like, this is just how we have to shoot. We have no room. And also we like it. We really wanted to make it feel voyeuristic, of like you're kind of peeking around the corner of something you shouldn't see. So I remember I called Bob up and I was like, what do I do? And he was like, you're not shooting through too many doorways. It's beautiful. Like, just keep going, basically. Sometimes that's all you need, is someone to just, from the outside world, to validate what you're doing.
To trust your gut. Just go with what your vision.
Yeah, absolutely.
My guest is Annabelle Attanasio. The name of her new film is Mickey and the Bear. The film wouldn't work unless you had this great actress playing Mickey. Tell us about this actress, how you found her.
Yeah. So I found her off of a self-tape. She made a self-tape in her mother's kitchen. And it's this very raw and very honest and very present version of the character, which, you know, is something I think a lot of auditions are very crafted. And what was amazing about Cammy is she was so raw. So she flew out to Montana and we did a test day, and we shot a ton of scenes from the movie on my iPhone, where I played Hank and she played Mickey. And another thing I really loved about Cammy, she was very honest with me. And I knew that through her being honest about her feelings on the script and things that she loved and things that weren't resonating for her, I knew that I had a real creative partner in her and not just an amazing actress.
What was an example of something that you two had a conversation about?
Oh, gosh. Like so many just little things. She would say, you know, I want to be wearing headphones in this scene because I'm really in my own world. And I would say, great. Because mm-hmm. like these instincts that actors have are things that you could never think of as a director. And it would be little things like that, little details she'd want to add. I want to be chewing gum in this scene. This line, can I say it like this? Or could I be sitting, or could I be standing? I loved having that creative energy fueled from her. And I think it's what made the collaboration between us so good.
So you have this actress, Camilla, you call her Cammy?
Yeah.
Cammy Marone. And then the actor who plays her father is James Badge Dale. He plays Hank. What went into casting Hank? Because that is an interesting part. He could be a villain. Mm-hmm. But we feel great. I felt sympathy for him, mm-hmm. even in his worst moments. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about finding your Hank.
Yeah. Well, I had seen Badge in a lot of projects, but what really put him over the edge for me was seeing him in the movie Flight, where he plays a cancer patient. And he has this one really, really powerful scene where he's this tragic figure with so much positivity and so much pride. And in that moment, I knew it was the right person for Hank. He had, you know, both characters for me needed to be complicated and possess duality. So Hank is like incredibly proud, incredibly has a lot of bravado, but then he's also a very dark figure. And Badge was able to possess that in spades. So we offered it to him and he said yes.
It's, you know, on the surface, it's easy to see why Hank, her dad, needs Mickey. Mickey makes the breakfast, Mickey keeps the lights on, Mickey tucks him in, Mickey keeps track of him.
Yeah.
What does she get out of it, this relationship?
I mean, he is her best friend. Mm-hmm. He is her life force in a lot of ways. It's the, I think the thing of when your parent is your whole world when you're growing up and they're your hero and you would do anything for them. I think she gets a tremendous amount of worth out of the relationship in the beginning. And then when she starts to realize that maybe I want more out of life than this, and maybe I have my own aspirations outside of this relationship with my dad or outside of any relationship with any person, I think she starts to step back and their relationship begins to deteriorate.
There is a very subtle discussion of opioid addiction in it. It's not like this guy's an opioid addict and this is a town where this happens. Did you see that in Anaconda when you were doing your research? Did you see opioids as an issue, or is that something that you layered into the story?
I would say in my research in Montana in general, yes, it's definitely an issue. It's an issue affecting so many small towns throughout the country. But I would say his dependency on oxycodone is not something that I took from my research in Montana. It was something that came just in my research of veterans in general and looking at the way the VA and the way pharmaceutical companies push pills above any other means of healing because it's most beneficial for them. So that was something I wanted to encompass anyways.
My guest is Annabelle Attanasio. The name of her new film is Mickey and the Bear. So it's interesting in the film, and it made me, unsettled me at the beginning, and I understand why it was supposed to, but aside from their dynamic of this young woman taking care of her dad in a maternal way, there's also this sense that her father sometimes looks at her and recognizes her sexuality. Mm-hmm. And we come to understand why later in the film. I don't want to give anything away. Why was that a beat that you wanted to touch on?
Well, more than him seeing her as a sexual being, because I think it's a very uncomfortable thing for fathers to see their daughters maturing. I think culturally we impose a lot of sexuality on young girls and teenage girls that they didn't ask for, and even adult women. You know, none of us want to be looked at that way necessarily all the time. But it's definitely a theme that exists and kind of stems from movies as well. So I think more as a writer and director, I wanted to shed a little bit of light on that. But also the film, I think, really treads carefully in that and doesn't make any of that gratuitous or expose either of the characters too much, which is why I shot a lot of stuff in very wide shots. There's like a lot of potentially violent behavior and dynamics happening, but you'll see it from a very far away point. I think because I was more interested in the way the audience might impose that sexuality onto the situation rather than like putting it into the perspective of Mickey or Hank.
Did you give your actors a backstory on this family? Because we get glimpses of it, but there's no, it's the one thing about I like about the film is it's very subtle. We don't, you know, there aren't any flashbacks of them joyously on their, you know, on their first date or them coming together. The mother has passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. Did you talk about backstories beforehand? Did they bring backstories to you? How did that work?
Well, it was, that was a very mutual thing because some actors want to really get into it with you, and some of them want to craft it themselves. And I'm the type of director who wants them to just do what works for them. I will never send like a fact sheet to an actor and say like, you have to abide by these rules. It just has to feel real for them. And so more so, I think the two of them crafted stuff together. Cammy would call me and ask questions about like the timeline of the mother's death and stuff. And I told her what was true for me. But ultimately, I think they decided for themselves what felt most true. And I think it was just coherent between the two of them.
In the film, the daughter refers to her father as Dad sometimes and Hank sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
As you were writing this, was there a reason for the placement of Dad or Hank in the script at times?
Yes, that was a very intentional thing. And I'm glad you brought it up. Yeah, I think especially in the beginning, she calls him Hank a lot, because I almost didn't want the audience to know what his relation to her was when you see the two of them together for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted you to wonder if he was her dad or her boyfriend or her brother or friend. And I think, you know, you call people by different names based on the situation. So that's definitely why that's present in the film.
There's a moment in the film with one of the adults in the town. And the interesting thing about, you caught about small town America, is that everybody knows everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows everybody's backstory. Mm-hmm. They're kind of in each other's business, whether they want to be or not. Mm-hmm. And a doctor who's been trying to help this family tells Mickey, your dad's not going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
This is just not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you want it laid out there for Mickey? Did you want us to see Mickey have to struggle with that decision? You know, it sort of closes a door in one way because you know she's devoted to her dad.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, we know she's devoted to her dad.
Yeah, well, with that, it definitely does close this door of this false hope you're given that, like, each day, you know, maybe he will get better, maybe he'll turn around, and all of the tiny good things might add up to one great thing, which would be a turnaround of his life. And I think at that point in the movie too, it's what she needs to really stand up to him finally and for the first time in her life, which is what she does after that scene. I think I just really wanted it to feel like it would oscillate between her staying and her leaving and her staying and her leaving, because I think that when you're in abusive dynamics, that's a lot what it's like. You're like, I'm leaving, it's done. And then you're like, well, they did this really nice thing. And it's this constant mania of mm-hmm. feeling like you don't really know who the other person is, and certainly not who you are either.
I have another question about, it's subtle. You know, there's a mention of a Superfund site, which mm-hmm. if you put the dots together, maybe that led to the mother's cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There are shots of some of Hank's, I don't know if it's an award, but there's a flag. There's mm-hmm. there's a folded military flag.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about being in Fallujah. If you know anything about what went on in the Iraq War, you know what that was like.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one thing that's escaped me, though. Mickey's sort of love interest in this is biracial.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't mentioned at all. I mean, there's a shot of homophobia at the doctor at one point, just mm-hmm. a very, very subtle. Why didn't that come up? I'm sort of curious, because in the middle of Montana, it's this biracial guy with a British accent shows
mm-hmm.
up.
Right. Yeah, and there's not really too many people like that. I will say Anaconda is a very liberal town, and it's definitely become more diverse since I started writing this. But I don't think, in terms of Hank's relationship with Wyatt, which is the kind of hateful one, it's so, so subtle, the ways in which he is violent towards Wyatt with his words, and then ultimately with his actions. But for Mickey, he's just a person, and mm-hmm. he's just a person that reflects the self-worth she so badly wants, because Wyatt has found that in himself. And so I think Wyatt's sense of self and his confidence in himself is what throws Hank off, and the fact that he's biracial is like, and British, is just like two more things that make him so threatening to Hank.
My guest is Annabelle Attanasio. The name of her new film is Mickey and the Bear. Can you tell us a little bit about the set design? Because you've mentioned a lot of this takes place in these trailers where they live. And it really feels like you just walked in and found that trailer.
Yeah.
How did you work with your production designer? What kind of conversations did you have about creating that environment?
I just wanted it to feel like a fully functional space, almost like site-specific theater in a way, where you could go and the faucets would run and you could sleep in the bed, which actually our locations manager would sleep in the bed a lot of nights to man watch over the trailer. But I found that trailer on the Billings, Montana Craigslist, and my producer and I went out there to look at it, and we wound up getting it towed hundreds of miles to Anaconda, Montana, which took actually weeks. It's very heavy. And then in terms of the production design, Katie Fleming, who designed the movie, just layered it with so much history. She was very cognizant of making Vanessa, the mother, a present force in the home. So like at the dining room table, you'll see the third chair is still there. Mm-hmm. There's lots of very feminine touches. Her dresses are all still there. And I think it was something important to us to make it feel like there was this ghost character, the third kind of lead of the movie, which is this mother that is no longer here.
For people might be thinking, I know the name, you're an actor. Mm-hmm. And you left a pretty plummy television gig on a series to go make this movie. Mm-hmm. Why? Why was it worth it to decide, you know what, I'm out of here, steady paycheck and job and all that?
This is what I have always wanted to do. And I went into acting first, and I initially thought that that was my path. But after years of working in TV and I guess being looked at as just a vessel for a story and not a creative person myself as an actor, I really grew sick of it. And for this movie, like, I think I fell into directing it. I just told the story in the script because I really loved what I was imagining. But there was no question for me when we got the money together at that point and had cast. I was like, this is... if I die tomorrow, I will die making this movie, which I think is what you need to have as a director of a first-time feature. It's so hard to get a movie made that, like, for me, I think the steadiness and the financial element of working in television was great, but, like, nothing could top making a directorial debut, especially having Final Cut and getting to cast my own actors and having that creative freedom.
Mickey and the Bear premiered November 13th here in New York. And tonight, there'll be a Q&A after the 8:10 screening at the Film Forum. Annabelle Attanasio, thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on your film.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This is All of It on WNYC. On the way, Team Gothamist stops by to catch us up on the week's culture news in and around New York City, including why someone wanted to move the iconic Charging Bull sculpture, and why you may be interested in taking something called a forest bath. Find out why after a quick break.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.